This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire Board of Education stunned the state's charter school community last week with the announcement it would deny all pending charter school applications. These alternative public schools, funded by tax dollars but operating with a distinct mission, have for a long time found the state their best ally when it came to getting up and running after years of rejection from local districts. But at a meeting last Wednesday, the board said the legislature hadn't set aside enough money to pay for more charter schools, and so it would be irresponsible to approve new applications. The announcement set off fierce reaction among parents who'd spent years getting their proposals together and were waiting for final approval. Some state lawmakers were also upset, saying they believe the dollars were there. Now there's talk that more charter school money could be forthcoming later this fall, but the flap over funding brings to light the struggles charter schools have long faced in the Granite State, from funding battles and skepticism by local authorities to a broader critique that these schools don't do enough to serve the needs of New Hampshire's neediest students. Today in The Exchange, new challenges for charter schools. Let's hear from you. Should the state add more money for new charter schools, especially those just on the brink of approval? Or, just like everything else, are charter schools going to have to take a hit in tight budgetary times in New Hampshire? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests with us in studio. Laura Haney is here, president of the American Federation of Teachers, New Hampshire. Laura, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also with us, Eileen Laponis, executive director of the New Hampshire Public Charter School Association. And Eileen, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and lots of details to get into, folks. But Eileen, just real broadly at first, your reaction to this announcement by the state board that it would not approve any more applications.
It's shocked the charter community, quite frankly. We knew the DOE was inundated with requests and intent to submit proposals. There's currently 15 schools in the pipeline. But what shocked us most was, why would the State Board of Ed question the legislature's ability to provide adequacy for just one class of public school students, and that would be the state-authorized autonomous charter schools? There's no budget for the next budget for all district school students. So there's adequacy provided for them and assumed, but they question the legislature's ability to provide adequacy for state-authorized charter school students. We find that troublesome. And also, it's a clear violation of the federal grant. The two times that New Hampshire was awarded a federal startup grant for charter schools, it was because we had two authorizers. When the State Board of Ed was authorized in 2004 to authorize charter schools, that's when we received the first grant of $8.6 million. And because the legislation changed and authorized the State Board of Ed once more to be a charter school authorizer, that was SB 82. And that bill gave the State Board of Ed permanent authorization of charter schools. So to take that away is a violation of the federal grant, because we were granted the $11.6 million based on two authorizers. The State Board of Ed has been the only active authorizer. There's only one school that has both state and local authorization. So it's a clear violation of the federal grant, and that has the six schools that opened up this fall very, very nervous about the continuation of their federal grant. I don't believe that the State Board was aware of this. I think that they were given incomplete information, and we're hoping for a quick reversal of this decision so that it does not jeopardize the schools that open this fall or the ones that are in the pipeline.
And just to clear up, lots of detail, but you mentioned a couple times, Eileen, two authorizers. Let me see if I get this right. Right now on the books in New Hampshire, either a local district can say yes to a new charter school, or the State Board of Education can say yes to a new charter school, and the federal grant is based on having those two authorizers in place.
Correct. The other thing that we found confusing about the memo that the State Board put out was it said that the local authorization was still open. The state pays the local authorized charter schools, which are district authorized, the same $5,450 that they would pay a state authorized school. So there isn't a money difference. And also the timeline in the statute for local authorization, the two first timelines are September 1st and September 15th. When their memo comes out on September 20th, they've already taken away that opportunity for this year.
All right. Well, lots more to untangle, but I want to bring Laura into this too. Laura, what was your reaction when you heard the state board saying, we're not going to approve any more pending charter school applications? 15 schools in the pipeline, as Eileen said.
Yeah, I guess I was a little surprised that they had done that, but then when you look into it, if there's no money there, how can they be fiscally responsible and give out money that's not there that they don't have? You know, we need to make sure that these schools are viable. And if they're being approved of schools and there's no money there, this isn't going to work. I think we really need to, and I'm happy that they took this, to take that step back and look at to see what's really going on and funding. I mean, traditional public schools run into this too. If there's no money, we don't get the stuff that we need in the schools. So I don't understand why, if there's no money in the charter line, why should they be approved for more when there's that money is not there?
Can you just explain a little bit, Laura, and the history is coming to play real quickly here, so we'll go through some of it. This, I don't want to say conflict, but concern about the two different ways of authorizing charter schools. Early in charter school history, local districts, Laura, had to say yes or no. And then in the early 2000s, this changed. What happened?
Right. At that time, it was the state that could approve charter schools. My concern with that is, where's the local control? You have this public money going into these schools, but yet you don't have the public community being able to vote on those budgets and have no say on how that money's being spent. So I have some great concerns over that state-approved charter schools. If it's a locally chartered school, then the local gets to have that control and the people in that community get to vote on how that money's being spent.
And this, boy, this is really kind of the backbone of a lot of these conflicts, isn't it, Eileen? I mean, you know, the local districts say, hey, local control, it's our tax dollars, we want to say yes or no. On the other hand, under the old system, almost no charter schools got approved. So finally, charter school supporters, frustrated by the lack of approval at the local district level, went to the state and said, help us out here.
Well, clearly the districts are not interested in district-authorized charter schools because they have not authorized any to date except the one. And you know, regarding the budget, there's very little wiggle room in a budget based on $5,450 per student. These are bare bones in their operating ability on $5,450, which is the lowest charter school funding per student in the country. And the ultimate form of local control is the boards of trustees that comprise these schools. They're based on parents of students, teachers at the school, and local community members. So even though they're not elected, they are certainly in demand and are really ready to serve their community with these schools.
Let's invite our listeners to join us, and then a lot more to talk about. Our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're talking about new challenges for the state's charter schools. The State Board of Education recently announced a moratorium on aid to any pending state-approved charter schools. This was a stunning development, as we've heard, for charter school supporters. But the state has said, look, the money just hasn't been appropriated for these new applications. Our number for you to join us on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Should the state add a little more money for new charter schools, especially those that were on the very brink of final approval? Or do you think that in tight budgetary times, charter schools should just have to take a hit like other items in the budget? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You know, the money thing is confusing, but I do want to uncover it a little bit more. And Eileen, from what the state board has said, look, we love charter schools. We think they're great. But the legislature just didn't appropriate the cash.
The legislature didn't appropriate the cash because the Department of Education did not give them the correct projections for student enrollment. For the 2012-13 school year, they underestimated by 322 students. We gave them projections from all our schools. We do it every spring. We get the capacity of how many seats could possibly be filled in the fall if you were at capacity. The Department of Education did not give the legislature the estimated enrollments that we had for the authorized schools and the projected authorized schools. And they also shaved off numbers of the existing schools. So they created this $5 million problem by not giving the correct projections. So they made it under budget on the backs of the charter school students, and now the charter school community is supposed to pay for that by accepting a moratorium on newly authorized schools when it's a clear violation of the federal grant. I mean, a lot of these folks that have been in the pipeline have been doing this for 2 years now, and they're very frustrated, and they've been put off for months by the Department of Education. And now to have this, as many of us have said, it's been like the rug's been taken out from underneath them.
Let's take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Thea's up first from Rumney. Hi, Thea. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm part of a group of 10 parents and grandparents and professionals. We've been working on our application for 10 months. We submitted in May. We've been told this whole time that we're in the pipeline. I think there's 3 or 4 applications in front of us. We're trying to create a charter school in the Plymouth, New Hampshire area, which is the largest geographic area without a charter school at this point. And so my question is that we were told it's based on this budget. This budget expires in June 2013, and our school is scheduled to open in September 2013. So I don't understand how this budget is impacting our school that is at this point 12 months out.
Wow, whole lot of confusion. Eileen, can you jump in there real quick?
I have the same question Thea does. Why are they citing a budget that doesn't exist yet as a problem?
Go ahead, Laura.
But we know that these are fiscally hard times for people. Where is this money going to come from? If we're talking $5 million, where is that money going to come from? Schools are already strapped. Public schools are strapped. Health and Human Services are strapped. They cut 50% of higher ed budget. So the question is I feel my heart goes out to these people that are working hard on these charter schools. And I think there's a need for charter schools, but we really need to look at this funding because right now there is no money in this state.
All right. Well, coming up, 2 people who have been deeply involved in this funding question. And we'll take more of your calls, too. Thea, thanks for that one. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on new challenges on charter schools coming up. And at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the future of driving in the digital age. And be sure to tune in to the Exchange on Monday for a special forum between the candidates for governor, Democrat Maggie Hassan and Republican Ovid LaMontagne. We'll field questions about health care and the role government should play in its distribution. Track all of our election coverage online at nhpr.org. Mix of clouds and sunshine developing today. Highs around 60 from the White Mountains north, 65 to 70 degrees in the rest of the state. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the New Hampshire Humanities Council, presenting civil rights legend Andrew Young at their 2012 annual dinner on October 18th. Details at nhhc.org. And Antioch University New England in Keene, offering 7 different master's and doctoral programs in environmental studies. antiochne.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're discussing the recent holdoff on approving new New Hampshire charter schools due, as we were told, to the lack of funding. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And before we go back to our listeners, Eileen Laponis and Laura Haney, a couple more questions on the funding. And Eileen, just before the break, Laura made the point, her heart goes out to people like our caller who thought they were on the verge of approval. But we are talking about $5 million more dollars here in a super tight year. Make the case, if you could, Eileen, for more money for charter schools. Given the tightness in the budget, we've got disabled kids on the waiting list, we've got poor people in nursing homes. I mean, make the case for that $5 million, given that budget tightness.
It's not new money. This is the adequacy that would follow these public school students in a public school. Charter schools are public schools. This adequacy of $5,450 is very close to the average adequacy that's paid out to every student in the state of New Hampshire. So to portray this as new money is just playing a shell game with adequacy and using these charter school students and the startups as a political pawn.
Although the schools haven't opened yet, so you could say, all right, well, you still have a school to go to. It's not like you're going to be out on the street.
But we have six schools that are open that this moratorium puts them at risk of their federal grant.
These are ones that already are open, up and running. Never
mind. Newly authorized on that $11.6 million grant. Open this fall, and now are in jeopardy of the continuation of those federal startup grants because of this decision.
Let's go now to two gentlemen who have been closely involved in this. With us on the phone is Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and Chair of the New Hampshire State Board of Education. Tom, thanks for your time.
Good morning. I'm not sure where I spend more of my time, with Delta Dental or the State Board of Education.
Tom, if you could just hold off one moment, please, because also with us on the line is Ken Wyler. He's a Republican state representative from Kingston, chair of the House Finance Committee. And Representative Wyler, thank you also for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning. Glad to be there.
Well, and Tom, to you first. Okay, so what's the rationale behind the board's decision last week that really got people upset to suspend approval for new charter school applications?
Sure. I think I can, if you just give me 2 minutes, and welcome Representative Wyler as well, if you give me like 2 minutes, I think I probably can diffuse a lot of this so that we can go forward and be calm and clear. Number one, since I've been involved with the State Board of Education, we've always been supportive of charter schools. So conceptually, we understand they have a great purpose in the state of New Hampshire, and we've always been very supportive. And I've been on the board since 2007 and chair since early this year. So we've always been supportive of charter schools, and the enrollment has grown accordingly. It's actually quite simple. There are, and I'll try to clarify it for the listeners, just so we can just move on and have.
Please, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, there are 11 up and running, and we approved another seven or eight, which are also up and running, and they're not in jeopardy with the ones that are up and running, and the ones we've approved, you know, close to 20, which was the original benchmark. They're not in jeopardy because of the moratorium.
Right. So anybody's doors who are already open,
they're
fine.
They're
okay.
Totally fine. So what basically the guess, you know, estimating the enrollment is always a moving target. So, you know, in the spring, the department staff and I got together, and they were showing projections which would indicate that we, you know, we're about $4.9 million short. So we discussed that, and then in July we had a meeting. And we're still, and everything I do in my life is very diligent. So I want to make sure I had the right numbers. And yes, we were definitely $4.9 million or so short. So we got together in July, and the plan was to make sure that we had the legal authority working with the Attorney General's office to, put a moratorium on future applications until we were clear on this $4.9 million. And just for the listening audience, and I think everybody knows this, there's a ton of other criteria in a charter school. It's not just the fiscal responsibility and sustainability. There's governance, diversity, all that stuff. So when we approve a charter school, it's gone through an extremely iterative process. But in any event, one of which is the financial sustainability. So we needed to make sure of that. Once I was clear that there was a shortage and that we had a legal authority to put a moratorium on it because of that, that's when we made the motion in September. Now, to move forward, and Representative Wyler knows this.
And I want to let him jump in a minute if I could. But go ahead, Tom, wrap up, please.
Okay, we had a positive meeting with the legislators early this week, and they believe when they meet on Friday, October 26th, that they'll be in a position to demonstrate that the state has the $4.9 million. Our next meeting of the State Board of Education is, though, a couple weeks before that. It's Wednesday, October 17th. So we can't, at the October 17th State Board meeting, lift the moratorium because the meeting of the fiscal committee isn't until Friday, October 26th.
Okay, so Tom, for the general listening audience, though, is the money there or isn't it? And then I want to get Representative Wyler in.
Currently, the legislators believe that there will be the money, that there is the money, but they will first have to meet and make that clear to us on Friday, October 26th. So quickly, I know it's radio, I will give a positive report on Wednesday, October 17th, that based on our meetings, it appears that there'll be the money, but I can't make any motion. We then meet again in November, November 21st, Wednesday is the next meeting after the October meeting, and at that point, we could lift the moratorium if the meeting on Friday, October 26th, goes well. Now, let me just say one other
thing. I really want to get Representative Wyland here. I'm so sorry, Tom. Please hang on the line with us. But you've been talking a lot about the legislature and the money. We've got Representative Wyler here, again, chair of the House Finance Committee. Representative Wyler, is the money there or isn't it? Does the state have this $5 million for new charter schools or not?
I am pretty sure that the money is there, but the steps that were followed were not according to the law, and obviously the Attorney General didn't read them very thoroughly in the and the Department of Education didn't do what we allowed them to do when 15, 16 months ago, we were not certain how many charter school students would be coming in the second year of the biennium budget. And we have to look way ahead. So we put in there that the Department of Ed could overspend up to 10% of what we put in the budget. And they came back to me and said, well, it looks like that's what they were going to do to go through the first year. And then they said they'd need more money in the second year. And I said, well, you know, the procedure is there to come back to the Joint Fiscal Committee, which is the five reps and the five senators, and we would approve it. Now, normally, the Fiscal Committee wouldn't be allowed to add that much money to a budget, but very narrowly that was put into the law that they could come back to fiscal. I anticipated in my conversations with Department of Ed that they would do so. But they had not done so when they could have. Had they done so, they would not have advised the Board of Education that there wasn't going to be enough money.
So the money was there, Representative Wyler, but they didn't ask for it, and so you didn't put it in? Am I getting that right?
That's right.
So go ahead, Tom, if you could clarify.
That 4.9 is to take care of the existing charter schools that are either up and running or approved, okay? We're still... There are 15 other applications
pending.
That will be opening in 2014, 2015. Those are the ones we have to deal with as well. So the whole point is, even if we lift the moratorium in November, it's just to give a signal that the legislature is the next. We can't bind the next sitting legislature. But the whole point is, I think if the 4.9 comes through, then that will give a positive signal that the new legislature would do the same thing. But remember, and I just want to assure the listening audience and the people in the studio there, there's no jeopardy for the ones that are up and running or approved. So we just have to divide it out. The 4.9 is take care of the ones that are already up and running and approved. We still then have to deal with this 15 other applications, you know, that we have. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm going to give a positive report, but the new sitting legislature also has to deal with these 15 other ones. And just to Representative Wyler's point, I mean, you know, I would be the first to say maybe there could have been better communication, but we've resolved it because if the meeting on October 26 goes well, then we'll have the $4.9 million, and then we can move forward. So this really is a non-issue.
Yeah, let me just step back for a second with both of you. And again, I appreciate your time. It's complicated, but it's important. Representative Wyler, here's the question for you. And boy, you know better than anybody else that every dime of spending is being watched. Tight state budgets these past couple years. Speaker O'Brien has said there could very well be more belt tightening next year. In this context, Representative Wyler, are charter schools really where the state should put more money, given all the other needs that we've heard about over the last couple of years?
The House and also the Senate have both been very supportive of charter schools. We see them as a way to increase the opportunities for parents and children. They're very positive, all the results we've had with the charter schools we've had. There's been some big improvements in some of the scores that have been achieved by the students in these schools, and I'm very satisfied with what's happening. We're still kind of miserly in how much support we give them, but the opportunity will come in the next budget. We have fixed the amount of money that we have sent to the schools for the last 4 years, and this while their enrollments were declining. So if we adjust them in response to the real number of students rather than just saying more, 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 which they've always done, they've gone up 95% in spending over the last decade overall, even though the numbers of students are declining.
Well, and Tom Raffio, what do you think? I mean, you're the chair of New Hampshire's State School Board, not just concerned with charter schools, but all public education. And I'm sure you've heard stories about struggles in our regular public education system. Manchester schools, you know, they're up to as many as 40 kids a class. Is this really the right time to invest more in charter schools, given the struggles that exist in the regular public school system?
Well, as I've mentioned at the top, charter schools, there have been a couple that have closed, but in general, they serve a great purpose in and by the way, charter schools are actually considered public schools as well. I just want to say that for the record. They have proven the children. I've visited some. They've helped our overarching objective, let's say in the North Country Charter Academy, of lowering the dropout rate. The kids thrive. There is a role. And the proof's in the pudding. We've approved them in 2006 and 2007. There were 324 children in charter schools. Now there's well over 2,000. So they are working. And so conceptually, we're in favor of charter schools. We just have to make sure that they can fiscally sustain. And I just want to remind everybody, there are many, many other criteria on the application. So even if we overcome this financial hurdle, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to improve all these other applications, because we have to look at, you know, the teaching quality, the governance, and so forth.
All right. Well, both of you, again, thank you very much. Complicated topic. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Ken Wyler, for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Representative Ken Wyler, Republican from Kingston, chair of the House Finance Committee. Tom Raffio, again, a tough issue. Thank you for being with us this
morning. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Tom Raffio, chair of the New Hampshire State Board of Education, also president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. The number for you to join our conversation about the next step for New Hampshire's charter schools, given this fiscal uncertainty, is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We've got lots of emails, Eileen and Laura. I want to share one or two with you. This is from Edith, who says, charter schools provide a viable alternative for students who are at risk of not graduating. Our charter school serves 30 young people who clearly need an alternative to the big box schools. Pace Career Academy is the one locally authorized charter school in the state. We enjoy hearty support from our sending districts. I'm saddened that New Hampshire is so short-sighted they would deny these students this opportunity. Edith, thanks for the call. Laura, this particular charter school, Pace Career Academy, again, fits into a different category than most of the schools we're talking about.
Correct, yeah. And it sounds like they have a good working relationship with that local, that, you know, they're really looking at being fiscally responsible and being viable, because they're working with the local school system, that they can, you know, look at the whole money, all the money that's there in the school system, and where should it be spent. And I just want to go back to a couple things that Ken said, if that's okay.
Sure, Representative Wyler.
Yeah, Representative Wyler had said that, you know, these charter schools, these scores that they have on these scores are these great scores, big improvements. But you look at these scores and you look at the kids that are accepted. If these are true public schools, you wouldn't have something like this, a mission. Can anyone automatically attend? No. Then we have who should consider students who have few, if any, discipline problems. But we are not an appropriate setting for students who have trouble getting along with peers. You know, public schools have to accept everyone that walks in. If these are true public schools, they wouldn't have these statements in their admission process. So if you look at the score, I mean, these kids, if they're saying, no, not anyone can attend, you can't have any behavior problems, yeah, their score is going to be a little bit better. But if you really look at these scores, they do the same as any other school, public schools do. The money, you're just shifting money around. If you have to find $4-5 million, that has to come from someplace. And where is it going to come from?
Well, and Eileen, we talked about this, I think, last time we looked at charter schools with you. Questions about whether charter schools have to take all comers, because they are public schools. Also, some numbers that came out last year that showed that charter schools seem to be serving a more selective group of kids. What do you think about that? Charter schools aren't really serving that general New Hampshire public school audience.
I would disagree. All the charter schools have public lotteries, and they do accept students. They all have a mission, and they do want the student to be matched with the mission of the school. Because oftentimes the charter schools will hear from parents and students that they just want to get out of the school that they're in, and they don't really care about the mission. And that doesn't serve the charter school as well. And so I am unaware of any school that has no on their mission. I'd like to see that. And we did go through the public lottery last year because there was one school that had an administrative mistake and they corrected it and worked with the Department of Education. So we very much would disagree that they're not public schools given the amount of work that we put into the public lotteries.
Well, the picture that the Telegraph of Nashua presented last year, no students with limited English skills attended a charter school. Only 8% of charter school students were low income compared to 24% of all public education students. What do you think, Eileen? You know, this concern that they've sort of become public private schools, you know what I mean, for sort of a more elite audience that it has the wherewithal and the understanding that these exist and it's an opportunity you can take advantage of.
Well, I thank Laura for handing me the mission from the Academy for Science and Design. And if you had read further, it says, can everyone automatically attend? The answer is no, because if there are more eligible students than available slots, a lottery is held to fill the slots. So there's only a certain number. And then there is the lottery. So that's where the no comes from. But it refers immediately to the public lottery.
So even if my kid had a hard behavioral issue, he or she could attend the school. It wouldn't be held against him in that instance that Laura mentioned.
No, they are eligible to be in the lottery.
Our number again on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Lots of emails coming in. Here's one from Donna who says, this is part of the budget problem. An IEP requires more money. Now, IEP, Laura, is a individualized education plan, right?
Yes.
Under the special education
Correct. Laws.
An IEP requires more money. How does this affect the charter schools and the budgets? Where does the money come from for students at a charter school with an IEP? Can you answer that, Eileen? Or
sure.
Laura?
We went through this last year with SB 300, which clarified existing law and made it stronger and more clear to the districts that they maintain the responsibility for a child with an IEP. They also received the stipend from the state of $1,856.
That's the extra money that kids who have learning disabilities get.
Correct. And and the district and the charter school works together. And for the most part, they have really good relationships. They work well together in serving those students with IEPs.
All right. And we will talk more after a short break. Take lots more of your calls and emails. You can also post on our Facebook page if you'd like. The number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR. Support comes from UR members and from the Lexus CT Hybrid, combined EPA rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More at lexus.com/CT. And University of New Hampshire School of Law and its Franklin Pierce Center for Intellectual Property, pioneering in practical legal education for New Hampshire and the world at law.unh.edu. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear from people who really make you think, like astrophysicist Brian Greene explaining the scientific theory that our universe is just one of many.
And the image that I like to have in mind is, imagine that our universe is like one slice of bread in a much grander cosmic loaf, with the other slices of bread being other universes.
No subject is too big for Fresh Air. Join us. Weekdays at 3 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, author Lenore Skenazy on her new book, Free Range Kids. Email us your questions and comments before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, some major new challenges for New Hampshire's charter schools. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Should the state add more money for new charter schools, especially those that were right on the brink of approval before this moratorium that we're hearing about was put into place? Or in tight budgetary times, should charter schools just have to wait like many other items in the budget? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post your thoughts on our Facebook page. Terry's waiting in Gilmanton. Hi, Terry. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
No, thank you for a very lively show. My point is I believe in public education. I believe in looking outside the box and exploring all opportunities. But what I cannot wrap my head around is the notion that given this state and local control and the very difficult and challenging debates that go on every town meeting around the state and school district meetings, when a group of parents, for example, want to get together and advocate for a special program or a sports program or additional staffing, those things happen at the local level. And I don't want decisions that are affecting the school system that I support made by bureaucracies such as approving a new charter school, which is diverting money from the public school that I support in my community. And to me, this is part of a bigger systemic failure to adequately fund our public schools. And if you look at the constitutional amendments and the attempt to politicize the funding of our schools by after years of debate and victory in the Claremont decision, now we could potentially see who determines educational funding become a political football again in this legislature. So, I mean, we need to think outside the box, but as much as we want to look at those examples of some charter schools doing amazing things, look at New York City, what, only 4% of the schools are charter schools? So when you put that kind of concentrated attention on projects, and that's what I would call charter schools, why aren't we making the commitment to have those same kinds of successes across our public schools?
Terry, thanks a lot for calling in. And to both of you, Eileen, you first. She's really gotten to the heart of the debate, hasn't she? You know, the concern that most of the state's charter schools are approved at the state level without the buy-in from the local district. This is the debate that's gone on for so long about charter schools. What do you think?
You know, the opportunities exist for the local districts to form their own charter schools, to participate in the federal startup money. They are not interested.
Why don't you think they're interested? And Laura, I want to hear from you too, but why don't you think most school districts have not approved these?
I think they already have a job to do. These schools are formed by community members and parents, and that are putting in, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, sweat equity, you know, above and beyond their own job. And I think that the school districts has a Herculean job of serving the bulk of our public school students, and that is quite a full-time job.
Nora, what do you think?
Let's look at it. Nashua has been looking into forming a charter school for a couple of years now. They held off this year because they didn't have the funding. They knew these are tough times, so they decided to hold off on that. Up in Rochester, we have a new magnet school through the public school that's amazing. Let's look at Nashua again. With the new law that just went in, their budget, they have to use $80,000 now to transport kids to charter schools in Nashua because one of the charter schools moved to Nashua. That's $80,000 that was taken from their line in their budget to transport these kids. And they had no say over it. They had to do it.
That's Terry's point. And yet the opposite to Terry's point. And thank you again, Terry. That's really the heart of what we've been talking about for many years with charter schools. The other side of Terry's point, though, is, Laura, and this is for you, when local districts were the only ones who could approve charter schools, you basically had no charter schools.
Right, but I think you have to, I think now is the time that we need to take a step back, look at it. Is it appropriate? And some of these places are doing it. Rochester has a magnet school. It may not be considered a charter school, but it's a different kind of school in Rochester that can be done. It doesn't have to be labeled charter. In Nashua, there's still ongoing conversations about having a charter school through the local system. But these are changes that you just don't make overnight. You really have to look to see if the viability and the resources are there. And right now, they're not there.
Boy, it took a long time, though, for some of these schools. I mean, they tried and tried and tried and tried in local districts, and the local districts just kept saying no.
Yeah, and I think some of it, a lot of it has to do with local control. I mean, you have these boards that aren't elected. They're appointed. And is that appropriate? And it takes away local control. And I think that's the tough part about it.
Do you want to just quickly jump in there, Eileen, and then we'll go back to our callers?
Well, from what I understand, from both Nashua and Rochester, Rochester did look at a charter school, but the teachers' union there was opposed to it, and
that's
the same thing in Nashua.
That's not true. That is not true. The union has been involved because I represent both of those, Rochester and Nashua. That is not true. The union was completely involved in these decisions, have been on the ground floor with these decisions.
Well, don't you think if there was union support, there'd be more district-authorized charter schools to date?
It's a local decision, and if locals want to have those conversations, let them have those conversations.
Let's go back to our listeners, and Sasha is calling from Allenstown. Hi, Sasha, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Zaysha. I'm a student from Pace Career Academy Charter School in Allenstown, New Hampshire. And I just wanted to state a fact that our school accepts all different types of students that are having trouble succeeding in regular schools. And then we take them in here and we teach them how to learn on a way that they need to be learned. And we help them with everything. And our teachers aren't just teachers that throw assignments at us. They sit down and teach us at our own pace.
And Azaysha, I pronounced your name right there?
Yep.
Yeah, Azaysha. So what has this meant for you, this charter school?
It has completely changed me around. I came from Central High School in Manchester, New Hampshire. I had failed out of Central. I had all F's. And I moved to Allenstown, so I came to Pace Career Academy, and I have straight A's now. I'm vice president on student council, and I'm doing very good here. I love this school.
All right. Well, Azaysha, thank you for calling in. Now, this school, I believe, Eileen, was the one that did get local district approval, so there's not this fight over local control and local money. Is that correct?
Correct. But they also get the same $5,450 that state-authorized schools do. So it doesn't, the state board's memo that says they can go and seek local district authorization doesn't really make any sense on a financial level because it's the same money. They're not going to question the state's ability to raise adequacy for a district-authorized school, but they do raise the question whether or not the state legislature can raise adequacy for a state-authorized school.
So Azaysha's school is going to be fine under this moratorium. And from what you said earlier, all the up-and-running already charter schools are going to be fine, no? Because that's a question I've got actually from Mike in Amherst, father of a charter school student at Academy for Science and Design, how existing operational charter schools might be affected.
There are 11 schools that are past operating under the federal startup grant. The six schools that have been authorized, and Pace being the seventh, are under this federal grant, and they have 3 years to receive federal startup funds, and that is for curriculum development, professional development, the types of things that really set the foundation for a school. And that those schools are at risk because they State Board of Ed's decision to hold a moratorium on the only viable existing authorizer violates the federal grant. And I've worked with the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, who concurs that our federal grant is at risk. So those seven schools that are currently receiving and expect to continue to receive federal startup funds for the next 3 years, those are the schools that are at risk. Not of their adequacy. I don't think any public school student in New Hampshire is at risk of not receiving their adequacy.
From the state. I see what you're saying. So these charter schools that are up and running, they will get their state grant, but they are also operating with money from a federal grant. And you're saying that the State Board of Education's decision to put this moratorium on puts that federal grant at risk.
Correct.
I see what you're saying. All right. I'm glad we got that call. Good to hear from you, Azaysha. And let's take another one. This is Jamie in Plymouth. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm glad to hear the discussion circle back around to the discussion of local control because in some ways it seems like a red herring. While the approval comes from the State Board of Education, these committees, these founding committees, are all formed by local parents who feel as though their local school boards are not meeting their needs or their children's needs. So it's really an example of parents in the local communities trying to find choices for their students and their children. I think it's not an accurate discussion to say that this is something that's foisted upon the local communities by the state board when it's local parents trying to find these solutions.
Well, it's local parents who want these schools. It's not all local parents. I guess that's the point, right, Jamie?
That's correct, but it's a significant, number of parents in the community.
Yeah, but, if the idea is representative government means we elect school board members and they represent everybody, these charter schools are formed by, selective groups of parents who really want the best for their kids and really think this is the way to do it. So it's not really the same thing, is it?
It's not really the same thing as representative government?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think that, there are plenty of opportunities for parents to make impacts on the state boards, but I think that as we have other discussions about incumbent politicians, once you're in place, you have certain, as a politician or as a board member at the local districts, you have certain interests, I guess, that you are interested in serving, and sometimes those do not meet the needs of students in the community.
So these are frustration. These are born out of frustration that representative form of government isn't working.
Yeah, I wouldn't characterize it just as frustration. I think that it's also this desire to have greater school choice for your kids. I don't think it's just a sort of an angry sort of strike. I think it's simply that looking at your students or your children and then at the local school district, that it doesn't meet your needs or your children's needs.
Yeah. Okay, Jamie, thanks for the call. And Laura, you know, this is an important point. We hear this time and time again from charter school parents. Look, it's not meeting their kids' needs. It's not, the current system just isn't working.
Right. And I look at it as the current public schools have a lot of strings attached to them. They have a lot of requirements. They have a lot of laws that they have to follow. And if you untie our hands, we would be able to do a little bit more with these kids and maybe help them out more.
Now, what does that mean, untie our hands?
We have certain things that we have to follow. In current public schools, teachers have to be certified. They have to be highly qualified. But if you look at the charter schools, only 50% of the staff has to be certified. So where can we have the flexibility that these charter schools are having? We can't do that. We have certain things that we have to follow and we have to do, and we get our hands slapped when we don't do that. Whereas the charter schools, they have more freedom on that kind of stuff. And I think that's it's unfair. I think with this No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, all this stuff is in high-stake testing is just destroying public schools. And if we were able to follow the same rules, less rules like the charter schools, I think we'd be able to do some of this stuff and be able to reach more kids.
Wow. Okay, that's kind of a fundamental point, isn't it, Eileen? Because it's almost like a coming together between your respective positions. Laura expressing frustration that all the rules and regulations tie the hands to do more innovative approaches towards kids who are falling behind. And yet, out of that frustration, we have charter schools. It's kind of a profound point, isn't it, that if local school districts had the same freedom that charter schools have, maybe you wouldn't need the charter schools because the local school districts would be able to accomplish more. What do you think?
Well, I think that charter schools augment the public education system by, you know, providing a product line of public education options. And, you know, like I've said before, they do a Herculean job of serving the bulk of those students. But whether it's the mission of the school that engages the child or traditionally the smaller size of the school that engages the child, whatever works. You know, we're all educators working to engage all our students in their education to bring them to high school graduation and beyond. So, you know, they're battle is not with charter schools. Their battle is with No Child Left Behind and the regulations that are imposed on them. I think it's because of those regulations and frustrations that charter schools were, you know, born in 1991 in Minnesota. And, you know, they are serving over, you know, 6 million students. In the country, the 5% of public school students are charter school students. In New Hampshire, we are 1%.
Wow, that's all. Just 1%. All this conversation and concern over 1%.
So all this conversation and concern over 1% of public students and they receiving their adequacy payment. And the $5 million is based not on whether or not the legislature would provide adequacy for these students, but whether the Department of Education would give the legislature the correct numbers so we wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah, and we talked earlier about whether the correct numbers were given or not, whether the legislature really knew what the need was. What did you think, Eileen, about my question to Jamie? And I wasn't trying to pick on him, but just kind of, you know, dig into the thinking. He was saying charter schools do represent local control because a group of parents come together for this. But there's the other side to that. It is local control, but it's local control by this specific group of people, not the broader community. I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Well, if you look at the board representation on these boards of trustees, they are community members. And so it isn't just parents controlling the board. Each of the boards has a complete profile of participants, parents, teachers, and community members all at the table. So I would agree with him that it is the ultimate form of local control in some sense. And also, you know, when you look, you know, in my town, when I look at the roster of people looking to run for the school board, oftentimes it's either empty or, you know, uncontested. So it's not like anybody. We all have a hard time populating these school boards with volunteers who are willing to commit their time and put themselves up to public scrutiny. So I think it's difficult for both of us, but they are both forms of local control.
Well, both of you, we have just about a minute to close out. And Laura, to you, how would you like to see this whole question about the pending charter school applications resolved? This whole debate that we keep having about charter schools, how would you like to see this move forward at least?
I think we need to keep the moratorium in place. I think we need to take a step back and really see the success of these schools. How are their test scores? What's the teacher turnover rate? And where is the funding coming from? I mean, you're just shifting money around. If you're taking one set of money to put into another set of money. So, I mean, we've gone on the Claremont for over, you know, when did that start, 90-something?
93 or 97, depending on when you measure it.
It's not an easy answer. It's not an easy conversation. But I think we need to take a step back. And there is no money there. Where's the money going to come from? It's coming from someplace, either your public schools, it's coming from Health and Human Services. You know, it's just shifting it around a little bit. And for 1% of the population to get extra, I think is not good.
What do you think, Eileen? How do you hope this goes forward? It sounds like what we heard from Tom Raphael, that there's going to be some resolution on this.
We expect to see the decision reversed. We expect that the charter schools in the pipeline will have every opportunity, as granted by statute, to go before the State Board of Ed and be evaluated on the merits of their charter.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you very much for coming in. Lots to go through. Eileen Laponis, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Eileen Laponis, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Public Charter School Association. Laura Haney, thank you also for being here. We appreciate it. Laura Haney, President of the American Federation of Teachers, New Hampshire. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.